Hello, welcome to the Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Street Day 138, and I'm joined by the wonderful Mr. Owen Jackson. Hello, sir, how are you?
Hello, Rob. You're wonderful too. You know that, right?
No, I do not.
You never get it. You never get it back. You always give it out, but you never get it back. So I'm giving it back to you. Okay?
I often don't deserve it, which is fine. Hello, everyone in the Twitch chat. Dydrin, Plymouth Troll Slayer, Scrivoken, or Cabbage Pragmatic. Thanks for saying hi from Singapore. Hope you're well. War Machine, what up? Cinder4 Gaming, Korg, hello. Before, I've got to do all this before we start the show, Owen, so I'm sorry about this. But I just want to say a big shout out to all sorts of guys. I want to say thank you to everyone on Patreon. Specifically today, I'm going to shout out two Patreons, Jimmy1080 and Scott Reed, a pair of legends. I want to shout out the YouTube community, specifically The Blader and Henry Mendez for leaving some comments recently. And I also want to shout out the iTunes community for leaving us some reviews. That's right, Mr. MJ Pegasus, and sorry again, make sure you stay hydrated. They left us some reviews recently, so if you do any of that, I'll give you a shout out. So I appreciate that a ton. Welcome to the show. Today we're going to be talking about a TTS tournament, so a tabletop simulator tournament, which is a virtual way of playing Warhammer, Age of Sigmar 40k, or chess, whatever you want to do. Owen ran an event yesterday. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about some of the lists that we saw and we were excited about. And then we are going to talk about the results. We were meant to do this show on Friday, but I was unable to do it. Owen was raring to go, so I'm sorry about that. But Owen, leading up to the event, how was prep? What was it like?
It was fun. Yeah, I mean, I did a little invitational thing for my birthday, just to get a sense of how it all runs. And obviously, Adam Mumford, who I think you mentioned maybe in the chat, he was the first pioneer, certainly in the UK, putting on tournaments. So I kind of got a feel for the structure of it. Obviously, it's all run through Discord, so you have all your tables set up as voice channels, like chat channels. So, and then you have a general chat. But yeah, I think, I mean, for my work, I have to be quite an organizer, like a project manager. So I just saw it as another project. So I wanted to get, you know, good, clear communication, make the pack nice and concise, trim a lot of the fat off the DHB. And then, yeah, just have it so it was three games with some of the either the brand new missions or some of the tweaked missions. But yeah, it was good. I think in the build-up, I had one list issue last minute, which one of the other players flagged, so that was really good. I set up a few different channels in the Discord so that people could ask me questions, and just wanted it to be all nice and tight. So on the day, there wasn't, you know, there's not any kind of like, what mission are we playing or when's lunch or, and stuff like that. So, no, it was great. I love it. I mean, it was brilliant. We're all suffering. This COVID thing just needs to jog on. But while it's still here, you know, we still need to play Warhammer. And I think the international element of it can't be underestimated. You know, we had players from all over. So that's something that you can't do with sort of proper Warhammer, as it were. So, yeah, I loved it. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, like, I really like the pack. So it was called Hammer Time. The event.
It was, yes.
It was called Hammer Time. The pack looked very, very, very pretty. How many players did you end up getting?
22. So I had 22 players, and I think across the different countries we had players from Canada, America, Australia, Russia, Poland, the UK. I hope I'm not missing anyone. So yeah, we had, I mean, I have to give a proper shout out to the Aussies, because obviously you don't need to be reminded or talk about how great the Aussie community is. But I mean, those with the time difference, those mentalists stayed up till, some of them stayed up till 5:30 in the morning to play the three rounds. And I mean, one of the guys, I think it was his first tournament. So,
They are also going back into lockdown, so they don't have much else to do, to be honest. They can't go out kangaroo fighting. But yeah, the Australian community is like, the issue is I sometimes get like overwhelmed by some of the communities. I'm thinking those Aussies are fucking great. Then I think about the Swedish and I think, oh, actually, the Swedish is pretty great. Then I think about the Irish and I think, actually, those Irish are pretty great. And eventually, I'm just like, do you know what? Fuck it, they're all great. Like
everybody. Yeah, I mean, props to the Finnish community. I love those guys as well. I've met quite a few Finnish guys, and they couldn't make it, unfortunately, because I think they actually had a true proper weekend at Warhammer. because they know how, their government knows how to eradicate a pandemic. But yep. Anyway, carry on. So many amazing communities. I think overall, we're all just a bunch of legends, right?
Basically, yes.
Basically, although, let's pat ourselves on the back.
Although the Finnish and their fucking swans, I'm not 100%. Me and Finland have got a bit of a flame war going. Or is it Norway? Or who can tell the difference? There's my joke.
Shots fired. No, so it was great. Yeah, we had 22 players. As I say, you had sort of really experienced gamers. People like Benjamin played, Philip Kartiev, who's an excellent Russian player, Mark Brooks, Matt Goldsborough. So names that you see crop up, especially not only on TTS, but in physical tournaments. And then, as I say, then you had players who were contacting me saying, oh, it's my first tournament. So the classic gamut, just like you'd have a normal physical tournament, you had your first timers all the way through. Everyone seemed to have a good time, and there was no... I had one ruling to make, but other than that, and that was dynamically, but other than that, everyone sorted themselves out. Everyone finished their games on time. Did a sports vote at the end. Nobody, you know, fucked off early. It was, yeah, it was really, really
oh,
nice.
That's nice. Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
That's nice. So who, before we get up to like the results and everything, there was 22 lists, but obviously with TTS, you're able to like just create whatever you like, which I think is kind of an interesting thing. And when we've done TTS coverage before on the show, obviously we've seen things like chariot spam and stuff like that. But we've also seen people quite often, I've tend to find, play armies which they already own, which I find fascinating as a kind of like some sort of like psychological like element. As in, I guess it's because you buy the things that you want to play with. So I guess on TTS, you just play the stuff you want to play with, right?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, there's obviously a few people who are down on TTS and not seeing it as true Warhammer or whatever. But you're right. I mean, a lot of people do play what they have in their collections, or at least... it allows them, you know, they're trialing stuff before they make that commitment to build and paint it all. I think aside from some outliers, and if you've got 20 plus players, you're going to have somebody who's going to bring something fun or something crazy. And we can obviously talk about that in a bit. There's a lot. I mean, it was a really interesting meta. If we want to talk about that in general.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean... the most, I'm getting better at this.
you are.
The most represented factions were Fire Slayers, Cities of Sigmar, and Beasts of Chaos, which is a funny one. I think
it's a weird meta.
It's a weird meta. Adding to that, so they had three players each for those three factions. Obviously, Cities is quite diverse. Beasts of Chaos has a bit of diversity. Fire Slayers, this is probably the least diverse book you can get because you just go 40 Hearthguard and some other bits.
I have slowly started to forget what else is in the book. The only reason I know that Eidolons exist is because I hope their points go down every year. I'm re-reminded that they don't, and then I don't have to remember for another year. I'm slowly forgetting.
Those Doom Seekers are missing in action, aren't they? Anyone ever seen a Doom?
Never, not once.
Grimwrath Berserker? Anyone?
I think I've seen Nathan jokingly run one. Or Nathan Prescott run them, which is the same.
I did actually. A Grimwrath Berserker killed my Petrifex Elite pre-nerf Liege Cavalos in one go at the Dutch GT. Maybe I've been touched a bit by that. But no. And then you had some Magickin of Nurgle, two Magickin of Nurgle players. We had a first sighting of Lumineth with Teclis. I played that, and we'll get to that later, perhaps. But the main thing, really, not only about what was there, but what wasn't there. No Zeech, no Croak, no KO, no OBR. And most importantly, no bloody corn. Come on, people.
I know James will be happy about that, but I know you don't care about James's opinion at all when you think he's an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, everything he says is, it doesn't really hold much weight, so it's fine. Now, I'm not gonna start an honest war game, a civil war here. So
I want that. Yeah. He calls you out. He calls you out. Just
you're such a provocateur. No, I'm not. I'm all about love. So no, James, that's fine. You can have your opinion. It's wrong, but yeah. As I say, some of the big bads weren't there. I still think OBR is viable. So the Petrifex nerf. I mean, in truth, God, looking at it now, only one Death Army overall, which is sad. I think they need some help, don't they?
Yeah, I think there's. I don't know. I think Flesh Eater Corps is still in a great place. I still think OBR is in a great place. I personally do. I really do. I don't think. I think that they're more viable than the entire destruction. So I think there's some real love. I think they're fine. I think they just have to, like, they can't roll over people as they once did. Mm-hmm. So they've got to play. So I think they're good. Even Legions of Nagash, I think, is a great, like, there's some viable Nighthaunt builds. You just got to play them. I guess the real question is do people want to play those armies, not do they want to face roll with those armies? That's kind of a
And when you're talking legions, it tends to be quite body heavy, which is a bit of a grind on TTS, you know, as you know, with like pushing around 40 blocks of marauders and stuff like that, and especially with all the healing, I'd imagine the admin side of a proper like Tony Moore or Ben Murphy style legions list with all of the respawning, I'd imagine that's a bit of a headache to do on TTS. So perhaps, you know, that's why maybe you're not seeing it. But yeah, a lot of order and a lot of chaos, not much destruction and not much death. That's but obviously, if people want to go on and look at the lists and stuff, it's all on tabletop.to.
Which I'll include in the show notes for you guys to check out at some point. So some of the lists that we 3 Beasts of Chaos. 3 Beasts of Chaos. What sort of lists did we see?
So they were all very different. If I just have a quick scan through, we had Colonel Cabbage, who's obviously a pretty he's a beasts player of note. He was doing the Gavespawn thing. So essentially, that's heavy on the Bulgors. So he had two Doom Bulls. He had Grashak and his Despoilers and a Great Bray Shaman. And then looking at the list now, he had a block of 6 Bulgors, another 3, 2 Gorgons, 2 tens of Pestigore, a 10 of Ungor, and 2 tens of Raiders. So the classic sort of lots of MSU. But I think in Gavespawn, if I'm not mistaken, what he's looking to do is get +1 attack, which is spammable. From if you're within 12 inches of a spawn, and there's ways of creating more spawn, then you're able to you're able to get extra attacks. So I think what he wants to do is get the Bulgors hitting on 3s rather than hitting on 4s using Grashak's spell, spamming loads of attacks and then just hoping that they pop off, because it's all in Brass Despoilers. So he gets the once per game reroll all wounds, and I think they reroll hits of 1 if I'm not mistaken. He's probably in the chat to correct me.
I personally think that he's saying RIP Brooch, but yeah, the Gav spawn, I mean, which is the extra attacks, right, from the spawn, and you can just keep spamming it, which me and Nathan talked about at Beasts of Chaos book review, FYI. And we talked about the fact that you should just do that, obviously, on a giant. That's the correct answer. Yeah. Right. No one's done this. No one's had the big cojones to get this done, but that's what you want.
Make it happen.
Yeah, +5 attacks on one giant. And you just want him to like put 5 different things down his pants and then just be swinging his club every. Yeah, just he's like, what's going on? this is a gargantuan disaster.
And he's obviously got the Wildfire Taurus in there as well, so he's got a nice bit of tech with trying to make those make that unit fight last. But yeah, and Charlie knows what he's doing with beasts. He pretty much only plays beasts. So yeah, that was one. We then had Blagan, Darren, who went for a very MSU. Here we go. Yeah, so the core of it really is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 units of Zangor Enlightened on disc. So those with the Bray Shaman support, they can go, what, like 30? They've got a 31-inch threat range flying. So, nasty. And I think he's playing All Herd, so the more summon-heavy one, which has been nerfed without Broach, but
and
still.
I think he also has that army in real life as well.
He's like a
Warhammer Fantasy Battle player who's trying desperately to come back to Age of Sigmar with his beasts. And I know he's had a tough time some days, but it's nice to see him plugging away. And I did see yesterday that he said that he'd come up against some tough lists, but he'd enjoyed the games, I think was what he was saying, which is a positive, right? Because it's a tough
one. Yeah.
Like, it's Warhammer on hard mode.
Yeah, I told him it was the hardest of modes. And I mean, when I went from, even though Sylvaneth were probably stronger in comparison, certainly at the time I was playing them, when I went from Sylvaneth to OBR, it was like, holy crap, this is like a different game. So if he can sort of learn the game and do well with beasts, he'll smash it with many other armies. And yeah, he did. He had some tough opponents yesterday as well, and some tough matchups. So, I think it's a one drop as well. So, because of the Phantasmagoria, maybe one or two drops. I'm not sure what goes in that battalion. I think it is one of those battalions which can wrap up a lot of it. Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, so he's going to be able to. Yeah, I've played him a couple of times with it, and it's really good. Lots of just like 10 Bestigor jumping in your back lines, and you know, the Zangor Enlightened teaming up with another unit so that they can get the rerolls. And yeah, it has to be played rather than just piloted. So that was the second one. Do you want to talk about the third one?
This is going to immediately get us demonetized on YouTube as soon as I say this word. But it was run by a cock, and it was full of cocks.
Wall-to-wall cock.
It was wall-to-wall cock. So Adam Mumford of the Plymouth Troll Slayers, wonderful gentleman, he ran, I think it was 13 cockatrices in a Beast of Chaos list. There were some other elements to the list as well, but it didn't matter. And there was also two Jabba Slithes. The specific thing with the cockatrices is they move 12 inches and they shoot 10 inches. Although it's an ability, so I'm not 100% certain if you could also run and shoot. So maybe that's the case. But either way, it's on a 4+, you do D6 mortal wounds. So from 13 shots, you should be averaging 6 or 7 D6 mortal wounds, which is phenomenal. You know, if you take that on average, you're looking at, that's 18 mortal wounds in the shooting phase. So it's a shooting attack, so you can't run. Yeah, so it's a lot of cock. It's a lot of cock is what you get. And then even not bad on the charge, they get, instead of having 4 attacks, they get up to 8 attacks on the charge, although they're not particularly great. It's force 4s, rend 1, damage 1. And there were some screens in there, which, to be honest, it's just like a pure joke build.
I don't think Adam's doing the TTS community much of a favor with this list, to be honest with you, because this is the kind of list that the knockers think we all play, just like these kind of like crazy lists that you would never see.
You could
see
run
on
that
table.
An event. That's like, they're 90 points each, those cockatrices, right?
And I mean, I think he's got Bellicor in there for that sweet control, and then like 13, and he's got two Jabba Slithes. Like, that takes up quite a bit of real estate on the board, you know, like they can move out and zone things and, you know, spit hot fire. I bet it was a hell of a lot of fun to play. I think he was having a great time, to be honest with you. And we'll come to it, but he did surprisingly well. Yeah.
He's coming on the show tomorrow to talk about it, which should be fun. So we can mention that. So that was a really fun list. Fire Slayers, I guess it was just all Hearthguard. Cities of Sigmar, what did we see? It was the shooting.
To be fair, we'll backtrack on the Hearthguard one tiny bit, because John Keatley or Keatley, I don't know how to pronounce it. He actually did have, I know that it's, I'm lazy with it as well sometimes. I'm not saying you're lazy, but I'm just saying that, you know, you think, Fire Slayers, ginger guys, couple of heroes that stop everything dying, and then Hearthguard. But he did actually have a few little different things, which was, he was running Vorstarg, not Hermdar.
Oh, wow.
So that's the fast one. And he had two gun haulers in there as well.
A bit of shooting.
So a nice bit of shooting, and a little bit of bouncing around and zapping. So yeah, he had the Rune Father on foot, a Rune Master, and a Battlesmith, and then 2 20s of Hearthguard, one Broadaxe, one Poleaxe, 3 times 10 Volkites, and then 2 Gunhaulers, and sat in Lords of the Lodge. So it's like 177 wounds. He's obviously got those unkillable blocks, and then he's got 2 Gunhaulers to zip around, because obviously they get fly high on their war scrolls, so they can snipe characters, grab objectives. Basically, they solve a lot of the problems that you get with the, you know, with those foot slogging Dwadin builds. So I really like that list, actually.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about the war scrolls, because about allies specifically, because it's allies, like, if you guys aren't aware, isn't a new concept, but it's new-ish in Age of Sigmar. If you're talking about book cycles and when they were designed, so when allies got dropped, which wasn't this year, it wasn't last year. I think it might be 3 years old now, but some books are that old, and obviously they would have gone to design and print previous to even allies being a thing. So it's quite interesting now to see things like Gunhaulers and Croak all have the inherent value in their war scroll. Well, I'm finding it quite interesting, actually, because like it's all like they're almost plug and play. The good thing about all the value being in their war scroll and it being less in the allegiance abilities also means that Games Workshop can control how much, like, they can just literally repoint that unit as opposed to having repoint everything around the unit, which I think, you know, it is interesting. It's, you know, the conversation with OBR with Petrifex giving +1 save, you almost like had to point it like it had a 3-up save, like you know, because of course why wouldn't you take that? But if they just put it that unit inside, like on the war scroll, so that self-contained mentality, I actually think, while obviously if you get outstanding things like Gunhaulers or Croak or Celestine Prime, that all of the value is already in their war scroll. Marauders are another good one. Like Marauders got all the value in their war scroll, then you can add value on, which is great.
Techless,
yeah.
Attacky, Morsar Guard.
Yeah,
you mentioned them. You know,
Kenry
I think
Harrenders.
That's what makes, like, I think there is some play perhaps in that mixed order list. You know, even though it's another meme list, but you know, if you've got Croak, all of Croak's power, well, a lot of Croak's power apart from summoning, like his command point generation and the quality of his spells is all wrapped up on his war scroll, and then similarly with Teclis, it's just 4 auto cuts. I suppose he doesn't have a lore to lean into, but yeah, I agree with you that those. When you have especially a unit which is low enough points to actually squeeze a couple of them in, as John has with his Fire Slayers list, then those low pointed but everything wrapped up on the war scroll, it makes them super viable to, as you say, to drop in. And he's obviously filled in a deficiency in that book really well with those 2 haulers.
Great list, great guy. Also, we've had a question in the chat. Owen, was there any units that you could see making an impact on the current meta that possibly isn't seen on the normal tables?
I don't think that the TTS meta is that different. I think things you did see, there were quite a few units that maybe haven't been seen because obviously we haven't really been playing post GHB. So there is a war scroll that did come up quite a few times, which is the Putrid Blight Kings from Nurgle. That was used quite a bit, and obviously that hasn't been seen on the table a great deal, but obviously in TTS we're all playing, so, and there's no barrier to entry, so people have been putting down 20 30 40 50 Blight Kings. We saw Mark Brooks run that against Obeid's shooting, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Maybe
6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks ago, like quite a while ago. Yeah. So you can go back and watch that game on the Honest Wargamer YouTube as well, or just like on our VODs where you saw that. And that was Blight Kings before they got the points drop.
Yeah. Is it 500 points for 20, I want to say, which is pretty good value.
80 wounds with a 4-up save, which is like, I would say the average wounds in an army is somewhere like, this is a feel, by the way, I don't think anyone's ever actually run the math on it, is somewhere like around the 120 mark. That's where I that's where I generally feel that it sits. So when I start seeing 160, 180, I'm like, holy hell. And for only a quarter of your points generating, you know, 2/3 of what I think is the average is pretty good. You spend 1,000 points and you beat the average, you still got 1,000 points.
I think based on some of the conversations that have come out of yesterday, though, I don't know if the 20 is the one, to be honest with you. Quite a lot of chat about how obviously they can get where they need to get to with the run and charge from the Nurgle trees. Mm-hmm. But the 20 is quite an old, it's a big block, 1-inch range, and quite susceptible to being tagged. So I think, I'm not sure how often we're going to see the 20. It may be that like the fives, the MSU might be more popular, because still I think they got a 20 point cut on a unit of five, didn't they? So it's still excellent value.
Yeah, well, the big question is what Nurgle list did we see then? Like, so we saw a load of Blight Kings?
We did. We saw somebody under the moniker of the original Chunk Free OJ, who is basically Seb. That's Seb Del Monte, who played for the win at Bloodshed when he did the coverage. You know, Leo took out the win.
Yes.
That was Seb was there with his Kairos Beasts Slaanesh build.
Yeah, lovely guy. Lovely guy.
Yeah, and great player. So he was running Blessed Sons, which is the Blight King-centric allegiance from Wrath of the Everchosen. So he had Bellacor, a Harbinger of Decay, obviously, with the Witherstave, obviously, a Lord of Blights, a Sorcerer with Blades of Putrefaction, and then he had the Cyst. So he had the block of 20, four units of five Blight Kings, the Geminids, and a CP, and he clocking in at 1970, so he's got a good triumph there. So yeah, 188 wounds of pure rotting flesh.
Perfect. What else do you want? That's all you want.
But it's nice that it's naughty. I mean, yeah, there's some cool stuff in there. Like obviously Blades on the 20 block is pretty disgusting. And it's a nice bit of control with, you know, re-rolling the sixes from the stave and Bellacor's ability. He was actually texting me through the course of the day with his Bellacor ability, just so for clarity. And he Bellacored his opponent's Bellacor. I don't know if his opponent Bellacored his Bellacor. But it was like what's that movie? The butterfly effect.
What is the rule on that? Like, is Bellacor's ability activated like in the hero phase? So it's in your enemy's hero phase. Do you even roll a five up on it? Or
I think that you can Bellacor because it's not a cast, a move, a charge, etc., etc. I think he would. That's the thing though. If you Bellacor. Oh my God, we could go down a rabbit hole.
Never mind. Here. I don't Buckle know. Up. I don't care. Someone in the comments, leave a message. Yeah, Bellacorception. Yeah. Someone leave a comment and do the math, because I don't care. Yeah, or let's just go deeper. Let's just, for the next 45 minutes, just do that conversation.
My brain is tired already after yesterday, so let's not do that, please.
Benjamin had a really fun list with Nurgle's Menagerie, right, which I was a fan of.
Yes, yeah. So he had the 20 block again. And then he was running, as you say, the Menagerie, which, let me see if I can find. So that was, that's basically Horticulus and some Beasts of Nurgle, and is sort of more focused, rather than killing. Obviously, he's got the 20 block, so they can kill stuff, but it's more focused around the Nurgle summoning, which is often underestimated. Well, and normally rightly so, but when it's built in the way that Benjamin's built it, he can 20 plague bearers on turn two is reasonable, which is pretty nice for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. Who doesn't want like 20 plague bearers like to hold an objective that are just like, is that turn one? He got that as well.
No, that was turn two, I think. Yeah.
I mean, it's still like, what is that? 100 and... Plague Bearer's back to 100, or they still 110? So it's still like 200 or 210 point, 220 points.
Yeah, I think they were I think they were 120 and they've come down to 110, if I'm not mistaken. And it's got some flex because you can basically... It's basically a gardening. I was laughing with him the other day because after GW removed the 0-3 endless spell cap, they capped endless spells at three because people were using them to block up the board. He's now just spamming trees everywhere and using them to summon from. And block. It's cool, man. It's really cool. So I think, like 5 or 6 trees is feasible by the end of the game, which is pretty nice.
I also want him to play a Sylvaneth player, and the Sylvaneth player just jealously staring at all of these trees appearing from nowhere and being like, why? Why?
Being able to actually put them on the board, it was nice to see some Nurgle lists.
And if no one knows what we're talking about, so if Nurgle's Menagerie is a Warscroll battalion that you can find inside the Magic Kingdom Nurgle book, it requires Horticulus Slimux, which is a character, so he's the plague bearer on top of a snail. Awesome model. I'm going to turn him into a demon prince, by the way. He has got a once per game ability where he's able to put down a feculent Narmor, which is the terrain piece available to Nurgle. They already start with one, but you can summon more, but he puts one down for free. Normally that's once per battle, but in Nurgle's Menagerie he's able to consistently do it, so do one every turn, so you can put down 5 a turn. You start with one, so that's 6, and I think each one generates maybe D3 summoning points. You could also use the summoning points to summon more trees, so if you want to get really obnoxious, you can like end up with like 6 or 7 or 8 trees all across the board blocking stuff off, which is kind of interesting. Is it a negative play experience? Could be, I don't know, but like it's definitely very interesting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to see, you know, the game being played in different ways. So
yeah, innovation. Yeah, it's rad. Super rad. I'm going to just call out Jonathan Etland here for never actually running that list. He years ago said he was going to, bought all of the Beasts of Chaos when they came out. I was like, I'm going to plant so many fucking trees, Rob. That's my Swedish impression.
He should have done it, man. He could have been the pioneer.
He could have been the pioneer, but unfortunately now we've got Benjamin the Gardener. He's the true gardener. Oh, Pete Pratt, though, in the chat, big love to him. He said he got 7 out once, 7 feculent Narmors. Nice. Which is cool. So any other fun lists that you were at the event that you saw that you liked?
Yes, there was a great list. Again, as I say, there wasn't much death there, so there was a really cool Soul Blight list, which was run by Adam James. I think this is Adam that he put some tweets on Twitter. God, I'm tired today. He put some tweets up about how he'd taken out Lumineth with it, I believe. Did you remember seeing those? With the Flying Blood Knight. So basically he's got Swift Death, Bloodline for Soul Blight. So I believe that's +2 move. And then he's got a Vampire Lord giving out some reroll charges. And then he's got both Manfred and Neferata. So he's got a buff piece in Manfred and a debuff piece in Neferata. And then 2 units of 10 Blood Knights, a unit of 5 Blood Knights, 2 Bat Swarms and 2 Fives of Wolves. He had a really good time. He had some tough matchups, but I think that's cool, right? I mean, I've never faced a Blood Knight on the table in all the tournaments I went to last year. So yeah, it's cool to see.
Yeah, I have played against the Blood Knights in different iterations over the years. They are terrifying when they get the charge off, especially when you buff them. Also, apparently we're all sleeping on Manfred and he's way better than we think. I don't know if that's the actual case, though. It doesn't feel it to me, nor many other people in the community, but I know Adam is his own renegade and does what he does as he likes. And that list works really well as long as you roll 12-inch charges. That's the key part.
Easy life. That's how you win at Warhammer, right? Just roll 6s.
So all you ever need to do is roll those 6s. That's
a universal truth. Other than that, I think it would be remiss of us not to have a chat about Matt Goldsborough's Lumineth list. Because you don't get to... we haven't seen that on the tabletop yet. No. Just going to scan through and grab that. So he was playing. I played it actually because I had to. We had a last minute dropout, so I had to end up playing and TOing, which was fun. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. I'm a bit tired. Apologies if I have. I played it and there's some stuff to talk about there. Let me just. Here we go. Is that it? No, apologies. This is great telly.
Don't worry about it. Just take a chill pill. Twitch chat, I hope you're well. I'll just talk to you guys. I hope you're well. I see Tom's up. Well done, Tom. K-Dread, fuck you too. Arkarai, fuck you, buddy. Thanks for being here. Grinaldi and Colonel Cabbage is shocked by how fast Fire Slayers can be when they want to, when they want to run across the board. But of course, they can run across the board. And to summon the feculent Nalmor, Pete, thanks for putting it in the chat. Wholly within 12 inches of Nurgle, hero to put one down when you summon it, or the other tree, or beasts that are in the battalion of Nurgle's Menagerie. 9 away from enemy models, one inch away from terrain. So you can build a little garden wall of them, which is quite fun. And just call it the secret garden. Just get super weird, you know, like really, really make your opponent feel uncomfortable as you're placing them down. You know, maybe wear like, bring a watering can with you, wear like, you know, a kind of, I don't know what those hats are called, but they're made of wicker, but that's not, wicker's not the right thing. Some sort of, you know, those things that they wear.
I know where,
like,
you're going. Yeah.
The croquet where they murder children afterwards. I'm not sure which one that is.
where'd that go? Okay, I've got the list.
All right, sweet. Please continue.
So Matthew Goldsborough, he was running, the Lumineth Realm Lords, the great nation of Sire. So they were getting that Aether Quartz in, double dose, baby. And then it was Archmage Teclis, a Sinari Cathalar, who was the general, and then 30 Aurelian Wardens, 10 Wardens, 10 Sentinels, 5 Dawn Riders, and the Aurelian Legion, and then Spell Portal, Cogs, and Shackles. As the spear player, I played him in the second round, and it's a small army, and I'm not sure how convinced he is of Teclis moving forward. It's that hero phase. And I think one thing, the only thing I'd like to touch on really was the Cathalar spell, which I've got the book here because I thought we might talk about it.
Yeah, please do.
Basically, in that book, they've got like 2 Bellicores that can do it to 2 different units every turn if they get the spells off. And they've has that been talked about much? Because I was a bit what?
Yeah, so they've got one of the spell lore in the better spell lore as well, which is also the CP1. And then the Cathalar?
Yes, Cathalar.
Has also got one, right?
But
it's 12-inch range.
18. So I've got it here. It's the Cathalar's Darkness of the Soul has a casting value of 7. If successfully cast, pick one enemy unit within 18 inches of the caster invisible. Obviously, he's rocking portals, so he can reach out. And basically, until your next hero phase, roll 2d6 each time that unit makes a normal move, makes a charge move, shoots, or fights. Make the roll before the action is carried out. If the roll is greater than that unit's bravery characteristic, they cannot perform that action. And obviously they've got a -2 bravery board-wide spell. They've got another -1 bravery spell. They've got the Cathalar redirecting the bravery when units use their Aether Quartz. So I was running, as a bit of fun, as a spare player, like 18 Colonel Hunters, so like units of 6 Hunters, and their bravery 7. So he was just getting them all down to like at least -2 bravery. And then, he was just basically bellicoring these combat units so that they couldn't do anything, and it was highly frustrating.
I have to roll a 5 up, or you just can't do anything?
I can't do anything. What happens is there we go. It's basically they nerf your bravery, and then they roll 2d6, and if they then beat that nerfed bravery until that unit makes a normal roll of 2d6 each time. Yeah, so basically every time I try and do something.
Action.
Yeah,
wow.
then and your opponent's rolling against you rather than you trying to roll that 5 up. I basically, he had a massive screen of 30 wardens, and I got the double turn, and over a double turn I had like 18 hunters with scythes, and they basically hit, stuck, and then he just debuffed them and picked them off over the course of a couple of turns. It's pretty brutal.
It sounds brutal, but not being able to use your army is a fairly brutal shutdown.
And then he's redirecting the bravery I didn't actually want to attack him at a certain point because I didn't want to kill anything, because then he could then redirect the bravery, and then he had total eclipse up. So for me to Battleshock Immune, the the Hunters, the Kurnoth Hunters, I was having to spend 2 CP just to pass Battleshock.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a savage combo.
That's horrific. That's horrific. And then obviously with the addition of making them minus 2 bravery, when you do Battleshock them, that's also affecting that as well.
Yeah, so I think it's obviously in certain matchups then where bravery isn't an issue, for your Bone Reapers or Death Armies, it's not so much. But oh God, yeah, with my kind of list or maybe Deepkin or anything with bravery, sort of bravery 6, 7, 8, it's savage, absolutely. Yes. And then he's got his Dawn Riders and he just goes, right, I'm going to spin up cogs, I'm going to double move them, and they're going to go 30 inches and just pick off. They're going to just then bop around the board, picking off the little MSU units that are left capping my objectives.
They'll just go through them on the charge, won't they? They'll just hammer them.
Oh yeah. They're great. Yeah, I was really impressed with them. And he got Technus in combat and was chopping stuff up. So, yeah, it was interesting.
What was it like just watching them just cast spells consistently, though?
We had a chat at the end and I was like, that hero phase is rotten. It's just because what they do as well is and turn one, obviously Sylvaneth, I put my Branch Wraith, I hid her as best I could, but he still managed to reach out and get. So he killed my Branch Wraith turn one. So I had no unbinds, even if unbinding was an option.
What did he kill it with? Technado?
Technado. Yeah. Yeah.
How was the Technado for the first time? No comment. You guys don't know what we're talking about. I'm sure you do. But technically, he's able to cast a spell which affects every unit within 18 inches. And you roll a dice, and if you roll a 5 or a 6, it could be D6 mortal wounds. And you roll it for every unit within 18, not even wholly within, just within. And then obviously, you can cast the spell portal. So you've got an effective range of you cast it through the spell portal. So you've got and then you measure from the other spell portal. So, because some people don't know how those endless spells work. So that means you basically have got an effective range of 18 inches from where the spell portal is. But that means you've kind of got an effective range of 36 inches kind of thing. You can reach out super far. It might even be 37 with bases and stuff included. Mm.
And then you've got your tens of sentinels then just to pick off whatever's sort of left. To be fair, he didn't roll great on it. He did it a couple of times. Actually, no, he did it every turn. But no, that hero phase, because he goes, okay, auto cast 4 spells on a 10. But then it's not as if Teclis needs to then just cast those 4 in a row. He just needs to declare that. And then all the other units are here are wizards as well. So there's just all this sequencing where you just and you can use Aether Quartz to reroll the cast or add +1 to it. So it just makes it such a toolbox. You have to play it, but it's like he was, he's obviously got Teclis with the whole of both laws, and then individual units all have chosen a spell as well. So he's just you've got the flex to deal with any problem, but it is obviously very fragile once you get into it. I just didn't manage to get into it, so that was that. But yeah, but it was great to see the Realm Lords on the table.
So what were the results like? How did we end up doing results wise?
So we had there was obviously first, second, third, and I think I would like to flag that I had 2 other awards as well. So I had Darren Watson, obviously Honest Wargamer show host. I asked him to have a look at all the lists and award somebody the first ever Darren Watson List Whisperer Award for a fun list or a creative list or an off meta list or just something that he appreciated. So that did go to the Soulblight list from Adam James that we've talked about with all the Blood Knights. So he ran off with the best list award. Especially with TTS, I think that favorite opponent or best sports, as it's called, I called it favorite opponent. I haven't seen that in other TTS tournaments, and I think it's really important because especially when you have that, you're not face to face with your opponent, and there's a lot of things that can be misconstrued, or some people maybe aren't that good at communicating, not in person. So I think you. TTS, it could go wrong. You could have a bad experience on TTS. Because if somebody wanted to, they could just, just log out of the game. Oh God, I lost priority. I can't be asked to play three more turns of this. I'm off, you know. And nobody did that, and everybody played through, and everybody voted. So I thought that was really important, and that went to Meerkat Mark. Mark Brooks took home the most favourite opponent, which I can understand because he's a massive babe.
He's a babe.
And then in terms of the gaming, the top three, I'll give you the top 10. Why not? Just as a little snapshot.
Sure.
So top 10, we had Dan Arnold with Ivanith Deepkin. So that was the sort of MSU Eels build. He went 2-1 and came 10th. Benjamin, he faced off against really tough Fire Slayers list in round three. He came 9th, went 2-1. Greg Shelton, actually, we should have talked about that. He took the triple battalion Stormcast. And I played that round one. Oh, boy.
I told you.
I know you did. It's cool, man. It's so cool. Like the plus one shot on those 30-inch range long strikes. But then also it's like he's got these Vanguard Raptors, the sort of little skirmishy ones. It's like a proper skirmish army. So he had, and he had these Paladors. The Paladors move 9d6.
Yep.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. They're a thing. But they can't charge after.
No, they can't charge. No, but they, you know, they were basically. I did double turn him from 1 to 2, and he was pretty worried. But I think one single Aetherwing. I was using Durthu to shoot off the Aetherwings before I charged, and that worked out really well a couple of times. But he had one left after a shooting attack, and that one then was able to tag a couple of units. But yeah, he it's amazing. I think that has to really be played. So fragile.
Again, just for people at home, the Aetherwings have an ability, and the reason you've got to pick them off in the shooting phase is in. So let's say they have Aetherwings and it's my charge phase. When I try to charge, in my charge phase, they can charge, so they can effectively move block my charges, which is why just having just one is super frustrating.
Oh, yeah, and they can go within three as well. So basically they can move and just jump in and tag and just hold things there.
Yeah, because then you can't charge because you're not outside of three to charge, which is the rules. Mm. So that, and I mean, they got cheaper, so they're a great utility piece also as allies.
Yes. Certain Ideneth lists have got cheaper, which is exactly what they needed. so that was super cool. So that was like triple Venator, and he got a 2-1, came 8th. Colonel Cabbage. He was the alpha beast and came in 7th with 2-1.
The best beast.
Pask, who's a lovely Aussie who enters all these tournaments and always does well. He ran Blood Gullet Ogre Moor Tribes and got 2-1. And then Matthew Goldsborough came in 5th with his Lumineth. John Keightley, apologies if I got that wrong, with the Fire Slayers with the double gun hauler came in 4th, going 2-1. And then the top three were Magakin and Nurgle. So the list that we talked about, Seb's list with the Blessed Sons, the Blight King spam. He got 2 wins and a draw. And then Philip Kartiev, really good Russian player. He went 3-0 with his Fire Slayers and came 2nd. And then it was Mark. He did it.
He
did the dream, man. He came first, and he got best sports, and he did that with Skaven. So we haven't talked about his Skaven list, and it has. I'm sure he won't mind because there's a couple of tricks there. We can have. I know that you're a big fan of Skaven.
Huge fan. Also, he's got some Scryer elements in it, which I fucking love.
He loves that. He loves that stuff. So his list, he went 3-0, and as I say, got best sports, so absolute legend. So he was running an Arch Warlock with a Deranged Inventor and the Vial of the Fulminator, a Bombardier and with more and more warp power, a Warlock Bombardier with more and more warp power, and a Greyseer on a Screaming Bell with Skitterleap, and then 20 Clan Rats, 40 Clan Rats.
Sorry, what artifact did he have? Vial of the Fulminator?
He had Vial of the Fulminator.
Fucking go faster juice. It's a gummy berry. It's a gummy berry juice. Yeah, just fucking Coke for kids. That's what it is. Yeah, just go fast, go home. Yeah, it's so good.
Anyway. Does that do again? Is it double? So you roll 4d6 for the doom wheel, and then you double it. Once
so you pick a so you pick a war machine within 3 inches, and you double its move. But obviously, with the doom wheels, they roll 4d6 for their movement, and so it's 4d6 times two. So like even like on average dice. You're rolling 14, so you're going 28 inches on average dice. But when it goes nuts, and you only can pick one unit, but when it goes nuts, it goes nuts. Now, the really exciting part is you can re-roll the result, but any rolls of a one mean that your opponent, like, so you roll four, any of those fours are a one, your opponent then gets to move your model. And, I took three of them to Exploding Dice event in Northern Ireland last year, and I got Best Sports with it as well. There's just something about the insane nature of them that people just like get hype about, and I really want to do a Doom Wheel army. But they're super weird because they take up both Behemoth and War Machine slots all at the same time. You're like,
they need to remove those keywords, and we'll see. Like whatever, you probably get about eight or something in a normal list if they remove those. But I think he loves his Doom Wheels, so I'm really glad that he's found a way of making it work. But there's 40 Storm Vermin in there, there's 6 Storm Fiends, and there's also a Warp Grinder team. And that Warp Grinder is that's a bit of special sauce, because I think Deranged Inventor on the Arch Warlock, that is a command trait which gives full rerolls to hit, wholly within 12. So okay. I think his trick, and I'm sure you won't mind me saying this, is that he can keep the Storm Fiends off the board with the Warp Grinder team, and then he skitter leaps forward the general with the bubble, and then where he wants to then deep strike on his Storm Fiends. So the fact that he doesn't get a hero phase to give more warp power to the Fiends isn't such an issue, because he gets the rerolls to hit anyway. Obviously, reroll wounds is better. But it gives him, basically, he's got Skitter Leap, he's got Gnaw Holes, and he's then got the Grinder team to bring on. I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be the Fiends. It could be 40 Storm Vermin just 9 inches away from you in a really awkward spot.
But also talking about like the debuffs, like we were just talking about with Lumineth, for example, or anything that can alpha or affect, or even Bellicor. You can't Bellicor the Storm Fiend unit if it's off the board. So like there's so many, like having it off the board is really, really important, and it has like it's really useful,
board,
right?
Board wide reach, I think, is really, really important.
It is. Owen, I think the internet just broke there on me. I'm sorry. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you. Yeah, there was a noise. It sounded like an alarm. Maybe it was, I thought it might be Mark's.
No,
like,
it was
alarm.
Me.
Rat alarm, like, you are giving up secrets of the rat race. Stop now.
so we'll put that. So he also had 3 Doom Wheels. So was it 6 Storm Fiends? So you could pop up the 6 Storm Fiends. Is that right?
Only one Doom Wheel. Only one Doom Wheel, I'm afraid, Rob.
Sad face.
But yeah, so he had the Doom Wheel as this throwaway like crazy piece, and then 6 Storm Fiends and 40 Storm Vermin are the threats, plus obviously the spells and stuff from the Warlocks. But yeah, I need to catch up with him on exactly how his games went. I can have a quick look and see what his matchups were, if you like, if we've got time. He beat the Fire Slayers with the double gun hauler in the last round. He beat the Stormcast list in the second round, and he beat the Lumineth list in the first round. So we've talked about all those. So yeah, it was no cakewalk. 19-1 against Lumineth, 19-1 against Stormcast, and 18-2 against the Fire Slayers. So
not easy.
Not an easy run at all. He's got the hardest strength of schedule in the whole tournament as well. Oh wow, it just gets better for Mark, doesn't it? Look at that. Yeah, he's got
best
the 30
sports
points.
Hardest strength of schedule, and he used Skaven, and he used a Doom Wheel, which is just cracking fun. But he's also really good as well. I can't stop talking about him. I've talked about him loads on the show before. I'm sure you all know. Grinaldi asked a question: can Bellicor curse someone in a garrison because he's not technically on the board? Great question. Well, so something. Question. So talking about great questions, one of the things that you dealt with. Also, congratulations to Mark. Well done. What a legend. One of the things that came up at the event, also, you had a really, really interesting rules question. How did that go?
I did. I mean, it does seem to be something which splits the community. And after I made my ruling, and then I because I had to, and then I then put it out to a few groups with a lot of experienced players in. And initially there wasn't a consensus, but then I think it did boil down to there being a final position on it. But it would be interesting for your thoughts or the chat's thoughts. So essentially, it was a Beast of Chaos, one of the Beasts of Chaos games. The question was, if a unit deep strikes on and is wholly within 6 inches of the board edge, are they able to cap an objective which is 12 inches away from that board edge? So the it boils down to essentially, can you be wholly within six? And then also within six of that objective, which is 12 away. I had to end up falling on the, my ruling was based on the way in which I've played it with all of my opponents, in that I don't feel that you can be within six, but also wholly within six. But the argument goes that where those two circles meet, there is a point at which one model can be sitting, have a foot in both camps. Yeah, so I ruled it that the Beast of Chaos player couldn't cap, but I've subsequently been informed that yeah, rules as written rather than rules as intended, you can. So I thought it'd be interesting to see what you thought, and maybe the Twitch chat, what they thought about that.
I think the issue is that so there exists so when an objective is 12 inches away from the board edge, it effectively means in order to score, I need to have something 6 inches away. So there is a definitive line. I need a base or a part of a base at that 6 inch line, wholly within six of the board edge. Also means that like it, I can be on the 6 inch line, which is still wholly within. And then I'm also on that 6 inch line, which is where the you know that they meet. I just I think it's I think it's maybe not unclear, but I'm also not sure about the intent, having thought about it since you said it earlier. But my gut reaction was like, I don't think so. But having talked to you, I feel like maybe like that inf like the difference between that and something like the example of a shooting attack that's 9 inches, but you have to be outside of nine, means that you, because you have to be outside of nine, means you can never be on the 9 inch line, but just within six means you can also be on the six. Like it's the without within conversation. But
Yeah,
I don't want to
it's
go down the road where we had that conversation 2 years ago. So I think just an FAQ would be sweet as, do you think? Do you think that's what's needed?
yeah. I think some clarity on that would be great. I know that Colonel Cabbage, if he's still in the chat, he's a smart cookie, and he's a little bit more on up on the finite detail or the wording. And he had a very good argument for the fact that you could. It may just be that he's a Beast of Chaos player and it benefits him. I don't know, a bit of bias
Bit of
creeping
bias
in there,
there, I
perhaps.
reckon.
Yeah, but actually, when he explained it in the way that he explained it, it did seem to make sense. But because yeah, the example you gave is a bit like how people thought that Arkanaut Company were nerfed because now their pistols have been taken back to 9 inch range. When they disembark and they're nine away from their opponent, they can't shoot their pistols because they're
They have
outside
to
of
be
nine.
outside, yeah.
It just, I think it comes down to the fact is if. Do you cap an objective when you're exactly 6 inches away from it, or when you're 5.9 recurring away from it?
Yes.
But yeah, so it was a bit of a tricky one. But both players accepted the ruling really graciously, and I was really, really pleased that it didn't escalate. And that was the only ruling all day, as I mentioned. It was a really it had a really nice atmosphere that the tournament did. So I'd
I
like to
think it's
thank all
also
the players for
it's also an
that.
important question, not because I think anyone was trying to be gamey, but because in that situation it's like, well, there's no clarity here. So like I think it's this, and someone else is like, well, I'm not sure. Like, you know, it's getting someone to make a decision on something that isn't overly clear potentially, or we've talked about it and it's still like, not sure on the answer, is worth a conversation with the judge. So that's good.
Definitely.
Okay, well, sweet as. Do you reckon you want to run another event?
Yeah, I've already had a couple of questions about when's the next one. A couple of the Aussie guys are saying maybe if we could start a little bit earlier or maybe make a two-dayer. But yeah, I'll do it again. As I say, I had some really nice feedback on it from a few players. So I'll definitely be doing another one. I think not going to be every 2 weeks, maybe every 3 weeks or perhaps once a month might be fun. So yeah, if people look out for that, I'll be announcing it ahead of time. And once again, I've got no cap on players, so we could make it a 100 person TTS tournament. That would be something,
Yeah,
right?
baby. I also have a question, actually, very quickly, whether or not you were able to track any secondaries, because one of the things, cause, oh, sorry, auxiliaries, because auxiliaries are something that we now know exist, but whether or not we're tracking that information, like we talked about ones that might be popular that were chosen a lot, but also which ones were achieved much. Did you happen to see any of that
Well,
or?
I have that data because I stipulated in the pack that everyone had to, when they submit their result, they had to put down every one that they both attempted, and they named every auxiliary objective that was both attempted and scored. So how about I get that information together before tomorrow night's show? We could have a look at that or something.
That'd
I
be
could.
amazing. Thank you
All
so
right.
much.
I'll do that. I do know from experience from a couple of games that there are a couple of doozies in there. The bait is going to be seen everywhere, I think, because essentially at the start of the game you designate a unit, and if it dies, you get the point. So
Right.
your screen or your sacrificial unit, definitely, that's going to be seen a lot. And I think pillage was quite an easy one. Essentially, if you've got a big monster, any unit over 5 wounds that's within 3 inches of a specified terrain piece. So start of the game, you say that house is going to be my target for pillage. Then at the end of any turn, if you're within 3 inches of it and you're alive, you get the point. So it's pretty, if you're like, we're going to fight there, so I'm going to choose that. So yeah, there are a couple of easy ones, but yeah, I'll dig in and see which were the trickiest and which were the easiest, and
That'd be
that'd be a bit of
interesting.
yeah, because it's a massive factor. I mean, obviously that's what's won Mark the tournament. He won by a point. So we've talked about it before, but like secondaries or auxiliary objectives are they're what swing a second place into a win. So they should be researched and yeah, logged.
Digested. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, exciting. All right. Well, that's lovely. Thank you again, Owen, for coming on the show and talking to us about it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's just always a pleasure to talk to you. It really is. Have you got any shout-outs before we head out for the day?
Yes. Even though he always talks shit about me whenever he gets on your show or other shows, I think we should give a shout out to Donal, who I think has now become Donal Daddy-O, because he him and his wife had a baby this week. So I think we should give a shout out to Donal.
Yeah, agreed. A wonderful man. He's only so mean because he's trying to hide how big his heart is the truth of Donald. And he's got a lovely little boy, Alexander. And so big shout out to him. Big shout out to him. A big shout out to the Twitch chat. You're like my kids, I guess. Only, no, I wouldn't disown you. No,
Also, I
probably
don't think there's ever been a baby which has looked more like its father because they've got no hair. In your face, Donal. In your face.
The baby also looks a lot like Colin Cochrane.
Wow. Okay. That's a conversation for another time, I think.
Yeah, that's true, Grinaldi, you are. All right, well, loads of love. Look after yourselves. Thanks to everyone on Patreon. Couldn't do it without you. You guys are angels. Thank you to everyone on the podcast. Please stay hydrated. And of course, Twitch chat, you legends, you heroes of the internets. Fuck you, buddies. Have a great day and look after yourselves.